Death makes the sun rise.
And so, time to say goodbye and thank you, Jason, for the editing. Jason Candler also on saxophone in that song, The First Amendment, with Brendan Burke on drums. The Stop Shopping Choir, those songs, oh my God. You can listen to them for free, all 8 songs of the new album, Change Without Us. Come to our website, scroll down just a little bit, and there they all are. You can listen to them for free, and you also for free come and worship in person with us and with that amazing choir, 36 Avenue C at East 3rd Street, Lower East Side, East Village, Manhattan, New York City. Amen. We'll be there. Just grateful to all of you, Winona LaDuke and Kubi Nadu, for your talk, wise talk after Glasgow. And I'm sure I've forgotten somebody, but I'm full of gratitude. I just want you to know that. It's time to say goodbye and move on with the 29 minutes. Whatever we've taught each other, I've learned a lot. Let's go forward in safety and in wildness. Somebody give me an Earth Alleluia.
Earth Alleluia.
Hi, it's Al Franken telling you to listen to KBOO, KBOO, Community Radio 90.7 here in Portland.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Andy, moan, my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Daniela Repas and Simone Fisher. Daniela is the director, animator, and writer, and Simone is the still photographer and set art director of Pour the Water as I Leave, which is an animated documentary, a work in progress, which analyzes what happened to Bosnians after the Balkan War of the 1990s. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person.
Thank you for having us. Hello.
That's Daniela, and this is
Simone, and thank you.
So, Daniela, you're the director of Pour the Water as I Leave. And to me, it's a very complicated work of art because it's thousands of drawings, it's still photography, it's video, and it's all going to end up as it's an animation. But just tell us a little bit about the process and then what the story is.
The process is fragmented into stages, where the live action and still photography then lends itself to animation sequences, animation keyframes, which are then constructed together digitally. The animation is hand-drawn on paper, and its source is in live footage that comes, again, from video and mm-hmm. from photography, but then it's translated into drawings, pencil and paper, and which is then photographed, made into digital sequences, that are then edited, you know, using softwares that allow me to layer it and really play around with all of these assets that I collected mm-hmm. through this process.
So we're here in this nearly finished warehouse space in Southeast. It's 220 Southeast Market. The public can come on weekends through March 31st, and you've got a lot of drawings hanging up that people can see. So let's just take a look at some of them. These are pencil drawings of people. I'm looking at head and shoulders shots with a lot of shading. And what strikes me is the composition is so beautiful. I mean, there's such good use of perspective and often the way figures merge with each other. These drawings you made from video, is that right?
Yes, that's correct. So I've edited the raw footage from videos. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, and you have actors
So maybe I can back up and say the structure of the film, which is a hybrid between fiction and nonfiction, and the fictional part is interpreted through dance choreography. So what you're seeing here are the dance troupe from Seattle called Wim Wim Dance Contemporary, and featuring two of our protagonists, Kylie Shea Levelin and Carl Watson. And these sequences of dance are then edited into something called an animatic, used in animation films, where you basically construct your story with live footage before you start drawing it, since animation is such a labor-intense process. You don't necessarily want to draw things that are not going to end up in the final cut.
Oh,
so
okay.
You're really, you know, constructing the whole film, you know, in this live footage and then translating it into drawings. However, I don't like to stop there because I like to experiment and move things throughout my process of editing. So even once they are drawn and edited transformed into digital sequences, these drawings, these animation sequences still have room to in composition, in scale, and things like mm-hmm. that I play a lot because animation really allows those kind of things to happen. So the dancers might be bigger than buildings, you know, that kind of play that animation as a medium really lends itself for.
Mm-hmm. The dancers are playing fictional characters. In the movie, which is about refugees, they meet real refugees who left Bosnia because of the war, settled in the US, and they're contemporary, they're in their 50s, right? But these people in the movie are in their 20s. So it's like they're sort of journeying in time as well as space.
Exactly, yeah. I wanted to emphasize how something like an event of war leaves these, or affects generations to come, right? Like it moves through time, this trauma, even though it's rooted in that past. So having the fictional characters living in the time of 90s and then coming across people that are talking about not only their experiences during the 90s and the war, but ever since then, all that path that they took, you know, being a refugee and then finding a new home and all of that, they are really speaking from present time. And the idea is to connect these two worlds, again, in this kind of like a fictionalized, surreal world that they're both sharing.
So this is partly your story. You are a refugee from Bosnia.
Yes.
So there was a war there in the early 90s.
Yeah, I was
and
a kid.
It was basically gunboats and bomber planes bombing
there
civilians.
There was where I grew up and where I lived, we were constantly shelled. There was not a lot of like frontline kind of action like in on our streets, but we were constantly shelled. And I was about 12 years old when the war started and 16 when I left Bosnia. But what I wanted to bring with this film too is that there's a lot of stories, war stories, right, covering what happens on the front lines and on the to soldiers and things like that. But there's this whole thing that is happening to civilians that are, I wouldn't say on fringes, we're still like in the middle of everything. But I wanted to bring these stories that talk about life that happens during the war. I went to school in a basement, mm-hmm. you know, because we couldn't go in regular school since all of the windows, right? So, you know, but we still went to school, you know. I still went to clubs where I wasn't supposed to because, you know, I was more afraid of my mom than the bombs because I was a teenager, you mm-hmm. know. So these things really come through in the interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Since I did choose slightly different generations as well, so
it's kind of ironic. You're creating this for people to understand something, how it was 25 years ago, but today, you know, the war in Ukraine, it's very in your face. Everyone's got a camera, you know, there's drones, there's films in the subways of families. It's like, this is how we consume war now. It's a lot more...
It's very different.
It's a lot more personal. It's not front lines.
Yes, exactly. And it's something that I was actually just discussing this with a colleague about televised war zones and what is happening in Ukraine. But, you know, like, that's still kind of... I see that as a documentation, of course. And it's good that you mentioned that it's personalized, but it's still not being broken down into this understanding of what it really takes to experience something like that. And Some people were, you know, like you said, this happened 25 years ago. But honestly, it's still, it takes a long time to really process something like this. And I feel if I was making this film, you know, way back then, it would have been a completely mm-hmm. different story, because a lot of these things didn't land. Because it's not just about, you know, what happens in those war zones. There's so much that happens afterwards, mm-hmm. you know, like, and it's really about that path, you know, of finding, like, you know, finding that home in this completely new country, yet feeling like you don't belong anywhere. You're constantly in this kind of limbo between the two cultures, which mm-hmm. is confirmed by all of these interviews and people that I talk to that are not from Bosnia, like people from a whole lot of different places.
Let's look at some more of the art. So when people come in, there are these three big rows of drawings hanging from wires between big pillars. To say something about the way you turn something into a drawing, because these are line drawings with a bit of shading, mm-hmm. and often they're cropped. It's up to you, right? You're looking and you're taking whatever you want
yes.
from the image. So what do you look for?
Well, I look for something that can function as a layer in composition that I could play with in relationship to other layers. So if a person is... I like to abstract bodies, you know, especially with dance. This is the first time that I worked with dancers, and definitely not the last time, because I just fell in love in the way how figure, how they're able to hold space with their physicality, mm-hmm. with their bodies. And so in that sense, you know, I look at the movement and how that can really bring the emotion behind the scene. And that's what it was happening on the set. I was working with the choreographer, Rena Butler, and the way that it would work is I would tell them a story about the scene to the dancers, mm-hmm. usually based in real life, either in my story or my family that has gone through. Then they would know like what the sentiment of it is. Then Rena would go and work with them in creating the choreography, while I would work with my DP, John Frock, and the director of animation, John Summerson, to create all these different ways that we can film that, and then we would rehearse it together, and then, you know, film the rehearsal, and then usually just go in the first shot. And
so you got a bunch of video, and then how do you turn it into drawings?
So I project the video onto the paper. You know, I have a little setup in my studio that is often used in animation as a technique, and then I trace aspects of it, you know, mostly like just the kind of guiding movement of each cell. And then I go in and bring in, like you mentioned, like the shading and stuff. But I also mm-hmm. have to, it's very different to create a single drawing versus something that is going to move. So I have to be very much aware of not putting too many lines on certain places, because that would really be too intense and you would not see the movement clearly.
Oh, okay.
So I have to have that in mind. There are images like these, for example. Like this person is just still, so it's a still drawing with just the head is mm-hmm. going to have this a little bit of movement.
So oh, like, I see.
You know, I'm playing with that as well, because I like this tension between stillness and movement.
So you did these key animations, which are like the chapter headings,
exactly.
say, or the main scenes, mm-hmm. and then you did cell animation where you show movement, kind of like Walt Disney, kind
yeah,
of, you know.
Yeah.
So this is very labor intensive, and this whole thing is you're trying to make a movie,
mm-hmm.
you're trying to raise money, and you need labor. And
yeah.
so, what are you going to do to outsource the work?
So there is few possibilities. You know, we have created an option where we designed animation kits that can be sent out anywhere in the world for animators to use from their studios or wherever they're located.
Mm-hmm. What would they get?
Well, they would get basically like this monitor screen that can be connected to a computer that we would then send the sequences and all that stuff. And then they would these monitors live in a pre-designed kind of wood structure that's really light. We're
mm-hmm.
talking like very something that's easily shipped. So then the papers can be positioned in the same place for all the mm-hmm. 30 animators that we need for this film.
So they would sit there tracing video, mm-hmm. and maybe how many pieces of paper would they use?
Hundreds,
mm-hmm.
hundreds and hundreds. I actually calculated for a 90-minute film, if we do I do a lot of cheating with animation. All the animators do that, and I'm sure the ones that are listening to this know what I'm talking about. But if you did, you know, like cell by cell, like every frame, it would take 45,000 drawings for the 90-minute film. However, you know, I'm making this excerpt that is going to be 2.5 minutes, and it took 900 drawings because there are loops, there are things that I'm...
Oh, yeah. But what kind of paper are these people going to use around the world? Is it just like photocopier paper?
No, I actually use 70-pound paper that is like drawing paper because since it's front projected onto it, it's not something that... Usually animation cells are like much thinner, but I like the way that the drawing paper allows the pen to really sit in and you can get a better quality line.
You use actors to produce these beautiful images of people moving around, but in the background, you have landscapes of Bosnia. And these are, you went back there to see the buildings as they are now, all kind of old.
As I was drawing them, I realized that they have not changed since the 90s, so they might as well be drawn from like that time. So I don't think that they will, the way that they're drawn, I don't think that they will give a sense past or present because of the way I'm putting them all together. Since I'm not after like creating something that it's, you know, a realistic portraiture of a city, but rather this kind of morphed, almost dreamlike environment, you know, where I was mentioning how I'm playing with scale. So some buildings are really huge, some are small, because I want to reflect that what the fictional aspect of the film, where it's happening, it's really in the memory. So like my memory of it as well distorts it.
It does have a kind of Joe Sacco look, like how he obsessively draws apartment buildings. And they're all higgledy-piggledy, you know, they're not regular buildings.
And I love the architecture there is just so great to draw. Because it has these like angular shapes and like things kind of like drop, like every floor is somehow different in a building, and it's really great. But you know, so I'm basically creating this space for the fictional characters and then for the interviewees that we have already interviewed, seven of them that are all of them from that region, not necessarily from the same city. They're currently living in the United States each.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Daniela Repas and Simone Fisher, and they worked on Pour the Water as I Leave, an animated documentary, pieces of which can be seen at 220 Southeast Market Street through March 31st. So, Simone, you're the still photographer on this project, and you work in medium format. You're a fine art photographer, big, beautiful black and white portraits. You also did the landscape photography, which shows up in the background in the animation in a kind of very line drawing-y sort of way. So you've got this incredible, rich, natural light portraiture, and you've also got this kind of reduced version of what you did there. Tell us a bit about these portraits. You went and shot the original refugees who now live in the U.S. and interviewed them.
Yes. And so, I mean, this film was a big challenge. Most of the time, you know, when you're on a film set, you have gaffers, you have a specialized, you know, light, everything's lit for you. But this was very much so catered to our sitters in terms of just their natural environments. It was a lot of natural light. I couldn't use strobes because that would essentially, the sound would pick up during the interview and distract. And so it was, you know, wasn't just out of not having that, but basically out of necessity. So it was a huge challenge. I mean, I lived and died off of a light meter. And so, you know, I had multiple cameras. I had my medium format that I prefer, but I also had a Sony mirrorless and I had a Leica 3C from 1949. So I tend to, which was a post-war camera. And so I have many tools in how I go about photographing, but really, you know, I started as a street photographer. I started...
You're from Portland, right?
Yes. Yeah. Born and raised Portland. And so I am from, I'm from like deep Southeast, essentially, like right off the 82nd Flavelle, Johnson Creek area. For me, this film actually felt at home in that way because I didn't start with a bunch of fancy gear and a big team. It was just me in the streets. But now it was like me and, you know, I always did my best to not disturb. You know, I always wanted to just like let my sitters become just enraptured within this interview and then just kind of, you know, make the portraits from that. And so...
So Daniela's there in the room interviewing. You got these portraits, Katika, Azur, Gore Dana, which is Daniela's mom, right?
Yes, yes.
And they're just sitting there talking, you know, they've got the coffee, they're talking, and you were like crawling around on the floor, doing whatever to get these stills that would go in the movie.
And that was the biggest thing, was not disturbing. Like, I couldn't get up close. You know, I would have to kind of be out of the camera frame. You know, we have multiple people on set moving around. So it's almost like a dance, a silent dance that you're doing, not only with, you know, your medium and your work, but also with everyone around you.
Mm-hmm.
And so this dance, you know, was the result, or these photos were the result of that dance, I would say.
But they were shooting video as well, right? And why were you taking beautiful portraits?
Because, so that's an interesting thing. Like, a lot of what I do also is BTS photography. So I'm a big fan of
BTS.
Behind the scenes. So I'm a fan of, like, Bridget Lacombe, who is Martin Scorsese's BTS photographer. These are the kind of, you know, giants, the shoulders that I like to stand on. And this was a unique project where I was able to document while we're shooting. Because usually what they would do is they'd have the shoot and the still photographer would come in either pre or post. So it was a very special kind of project to be able to do that as it unraveled. And it was a big challenge, but luckily, like, again, those street smarts came in. I was able to be stealthy. I was able to not disturb, which was really, really important in terms of just the unfolding of the entire film.
And you said that often a photographer's work doesn't just becomes a thumbnail, or, you know, it's kind of very peripheral to a movie, whereas your work is in the movie. It's the background.
Yes. So, I mean, most of the time, a still photographer will come in, they'll make the movie poster, you know, they'll make that, you know, key photo that's used to promote on, you know, Netflix or streaming services. But this was very unique because my photography just didn't live as promotion, but it actually existed within the film. So when we went all the way to Lukovitz, Bosnia, and went to film, you know, all of these landscapes I was, you know, making these photos of, they all exist within that. And so that was really special, and that's not common in film at all. Like, usually it's very specialized. You'll be called in for a couple of days to take your stills and be done. But this was a much more intimate project in the sense that I got to know, you know, the sitters. I got to know the landscapes of the Bosnian War, where, you know, taking photos of the shrapnel kind of laced buildings. It was a very, you know, emotive project.
When you shot these pictures, say, this Azur guy, where is he? He's drinking coffee at an outside table.
Yes, so this is in Portland, actually. This is right outside of Portland Storage. So there's a lot, that's where a lot of the art studios are. So it's like right underneath the Morrison Bridge where the old montage was.
Yeah.
And so this was outside. This is actually after an interview, too. So we were kind of like decompressing, but I never stopped looking with the camera. I always have a camera up until we're packing up. So this was the shot that I absolutely loved. In terms of just, you know, him being really natural. You know, I got sunlight. You know,
was this this year?
No, so this was in 2021.
Right.
Yeah.
So the portraits are very, you know, how you think of as medium format portraiture. Mm-hmm. And then the landscape work, how do you set up to take a picture of a building?
Yeah, so again, these are medium format. These are all photos that I made. And so for me, it's like, you know, a lot of my, you know, I've had fantastic photography mentors, and a lot of this was done without a tripod. I need to be on my feet. I need to constantly move. So it's like, you know, I've composition and training in terms of like documenting architecture is a challenge, but I just think I naturally gravitate towards it. So it would be like finding that right angle and taking an entire, you know, 12 exposures you get on medium format and using every one of those exposures, stopping for different light, stopping for a slightly different angle. You know, I dedicate my roles to one singular image. And from the best of
who's
that.
Paying for all this film?
Me. And so, I mean, you know, hopefully that will, you know, that's also a unique thing. Most of the still photographers nowadays, it's digital.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're working off of digital cameras, you know, because they send it to retouchers. They send it to all these teams versus I get to be my fine art training. Not only am I making the portraits, but I'm also editing them as well. I also printed them all myself. I work at PNCA, the art college in Portland, and I worked in the digital print studio. And so I was able to, I know how to print these in terms of, you know, buying all the paper, the ink, everything. Basically, my hand was in every kind of aspect of the creation of these images.
Did you use architects' lenses to get the shape of the building?
Yeah, well, actually, my medium format, it's a fixed lens, meaning that, like, you can't remove it. A lot of film cameras are just, you know, as is. It was a 70mm lens, which is actually a portrait lens, truly. There's 35mm, which is mostly what people, kind of anyone can use. But medium format, you get way more depth.
And when you say, I need to be able to move, you mean physically, your body?
Yeah, like, I'm always, you know, I feel like large format, back when I was doing it, I have such an appreciation for it, but it's staged.
You mean it's always on a tripod? Okay, yeah.
I am my tripod. You know, I'm also my zoom lens. I don't use mm-hmm. any fixed lenses. And so, because I think your feet, you know, are the best zoom. So that's what's really trained my composition. I'm not dependent on a zoom lens. I'm not dependent, you know, on getting an angle just right. It's kind of intuitive. But that's just my particular style.
So you know Daniela from way back, and you worked on a couple of things.
Yes.
But you went to Bosnia, and you're trying to tell this very emotional story. But you've also got your own thing going on where you're, like, very technical, you know.
Yes.
How do you merge the two things together?
Well, it's so funny because Daniela and I met in graduate school. We were right next studio mates. Like right
where
next
was that?
I was at PNCA, so we were in the visual studies program, the MFA program at Pacific Northwest College of Art. And, you know, I found out actually much later in my life that I am of Balkan descent. I'm Croatian, though. And so, in a way, it's...
No, so you hate each other.
Only a little bit, no. It's funny you say that, because when we first met, we did, like, not like each other, and then we became, like, sisters. Like, it was inseparable. And so, you know, a lot of way this film kind of called me home, in the way that I don't really have access to those roots. So it felt really special that even though it wasn't my stories, but I brought the technical, that fine art perspective, to give it the respect that it deserves as a project and as a whole, for both the sitters, the landscapes, and the experience at large.
Mm-hmm. You have several pictures here of the dancers mm-hmm. who are being, what do you call it, screen captured or something?
Yeah, they're
really
filmed.
They're not wearing those suits with little bubbles on.
Mm-mm.
They're just being filmed.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it like working in that kind of environment? Because presumably it's even harder, right? The light's terrible, they're moving.
And it was on film, too. I swear, I'm a glutton for punishment. the harder, the better, you know what I mean? And for me, like, a lot of the wardrobe was basically just based off of, like, 90s street style of, like, Bosnia. And, I mean, this was hard because, you know, again, we didn't have lighting, no gaffing, none of that. Like, I just had to but it's okay because I'm not afraid of green. You know, I like movement within photographs. I would argue against a perfect photograph, actually, despite how much technical skill I put into it. I wanted to have that freeing kind of movement. And the dancers were a dream. I mean, it was a photographer's dream in terms of, like, the composition, you know, just watching their discipline. This photo is with Daniela actually teaching the dancers the kola. So that is a traditional Slavic dance.
So you've got, like, seven dancers in a kind of a ring. They're wearing sneakers and baggy clothes and masks.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in there teaching them?
Yes, yes. And so this was, like, it was so joyous because, you know, a lot of times none of this would be documented. And I was able to get everything in between of what not only exists in the film, but also the process of making. And so that was really special and really unique for this project.
Mm-hmm. So, Daniela, what the ultimate piece of work would be an emotional documentary. It's about, you know, terrible kind of trauma. How do you see that coming about with this very kind of drawn out way, means of production? You know, you're not in a huddle with actors like in a traditional movie. It's all spaced out over the globe. How are you going to capture the emotion?
That's a really great question because the story itself, it is about this event that caused this trauma through time. However, I want to emphasize, like, the resilience that came from it and all of these things that happen not only to the community of Bosnians, but then to make a bridge to people that are experiencing similar ways today. Every element of the film is really focused on becoming like a vessel for those emotions. The live action itself, the landscape, the interviewees, it really comes together because of the medium of animation. And animation in itself, as a medium, allows me to really bring that nuance of emotion that maybe is not captured through only a testimony, through that traditional kind of just interview, right? because we're not all poets. We cannot really express certain emotions, and that's where the animation comes in. So not only that animation is like reflecting and lending itself for those aspects of the film, but also as this glue that, you know, allowed us to film all of these things different separately and then put them on paper and then layer them together and create this like shared space where the dancers and the background and the interviews live together.
I mean, if you're successful, when would this movie be finished?
So we are looking at the release in 2025 because we are hoping to finish by the 2024, but, you know, it takes a little bit before the festival season, and the ones that we're looking really are in the springtime, so I would say 2025. So. Mm-hmm.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were Daniela Repas and Simone Fisher. Daniela is the director, animator, and writer, and Simone is the still photographer and set art director of Pour the Water as I Leave, an animated documentary that they're both working on about refugees from the Balkan War. There's a show of their work on now at 220 Southeast Market through March 31st, and you can see more about that at 6billionsunsproduction.com. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus in person, Daniela and Simone.
Thank you for having us, and please come and see our show.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my wall.
Estás escuchando a KBOO Portland en el 90.7 FM, K2H2BH Philomath en el 104.3 FM y K220HR Hood River en el 91.9 FM.